evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, March 6, 2019. The rebels of the National Salvation Front say they are not willing to meet with IGAD if the agenda of the talks is not clear.
The tone and the content of the letter is not consistent with the directives that were given to Ismail Wayas by the IGAD Council of Ministers that he should continue engaging with the holdout groups.
And the UN's human rights chief says growing political and economic inequalities contributes to instability around the world.
Today, allow me to voice my concern at the apparently arbitrary arrest and detention and alleged ill-treatment or torture of several women human rights defenders in Saudi Arabia.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The rebels of the National Salvation Front is expressing doubts about attending a meeting called by IGAD's special envoy to Sudan to talk about the revitalized peace deal. IGAD sent an invitation letter to NAS leader Thomas Cirilo Swaka asking the rebel leader for a meeting this week. The spokesman for NAS says IGAD should state the objectives of Friday's meeting. Dimo Silva Aurelio has more for VOA from Juba.
Ismail Wayas, the IGAD special envoy to South Sudan, invited National Salvation Leader General Thomas Cirilo Swaka to take part in the March 8th meeting in the Ethiopian capital Addis Ababa, aimed at convincing the holdout group to lay down their arms per IGAD's resolution from the CGC6 Council of Ministers session. The IGAD letter to NAS states that the parties will discuss substantive issues regarding the possibility and modalities of rejoining the revitalized peace agreement. NAS spokesman Samuel Soba says the rebel group is concerned about some of the language in the letter and therefore is unlikely to attend the meeting.
The tone and the content of the letter is not consistent with the directives that were given to Ismail Wayas by the IGAD Council of Ministers that he should continue engaging with the holdout groups that did not sign the revitalized agreement.
In the letter to NAS, IGAD's special envoy Wayas states there will be no renegotiation or reopening of the revitalized peace agreement. Wayas goes on to say that any group unwilling to join the peace process and whose activities impede its full implementation shall be considered a spoiler and will be held accountable. Soba says placing conditions ahead of the meeting means IGAD has no agenda to discuss with the rebel group. He says NAS has written back to IGAD asking them to state its agenda, which it hopes include the concerns of the holdout group.
So what we want in the beginning, we said,
since the country is composed of three big regions, we propose a presidency composed of three people, where decisions are taken by consensus, say that every person in South Sudan will have an interest represented in the presidency and will make sure that the agreements is implemented in letter and in spirit. But with Salva Kiir having all the powers with him, he will never implement any agreement.
Soba says the deal signed last year in Khartoum will not hold because it does not address real issues in South Sudan. He says rather than issuing threats, IGAD should help fix the real issues behind South Sudan's conflict.
It has been mentioned clearly in every document
and even in the national dialogue which is going on there now that federalism is the demand of the people of South Sudan. And so if federalism is the demand of the people of South Sudan, why is it not being implemented now?
IGAD has asked the NAS to declare a unilateral ceasefire ahead of the Friday meeting. IGAD also says any group that was not part of the peace deal at the time of negotiations is not allowed to be part of the discussions in Ethiopia. Earlier this week, the Kiir administration invited holdout groups to join the implementation of the peace agreement, but said those groups must first renounce violence. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
UN Human Rights Chief is warning that growing social, economic and political inequalities are increasing alienation and instability in countries throughout the world. The High Commissioner presented a sweeping view of major human rights situations around the world in a speech to the UN Human Rights Council in Geneva. Lisa Schlein has this report for VOA from Geneva.
Michelle Bachelet says inequalities in income, opportunity, justice, and the enjoyment of human rights exist in all countries, rich and poor alike. Tackling these inequalities, she says, is critical in overcoming the grievances and unrest that fuel hatred, violence, and threats to peace. Bushley cites many examples of countries where the denial of rights has led to protests and violent crackdowns by security forces. She mentions Sudan, where people protesting harsh economic conditions and bad governance have been violently dispersed by security forces. She notes similar scenarios are playing out in many other places, including Zimbabwe, Haiti, France, Venezuela, Nicaragua, and the occupied Palestinian territory. Bushley says she is shocked by the number of killings of human rights defenders around the world. She expresses alarm at the increasingly widespread attacks on journalists and media freedoms. The human rights chief says she is very concerned about government reprisals against victims, human rights defenders, and non-governmental organizations who cooperate with the United Nations.
Today, allow me to voice my concern at the apparently arbitrary arrest and detention and alleged ill-treatment or torture of several women human rights defenders in Saudi Arabia. The persecution of peaceful activists will clearly contradict the spirit of the country's proclaimed new reforms. So we urge that these women be released.
Bushley condemns the detention of members of the Uyghur Muslim minority in what China calls re-education centers in its Xinjiang province. Activists say that about 1 million Uyghurs are kept in what they call detention centers. Bushley also does not shy away from criticizing the United States migration policy. Thousands of migrant children have been separated from their families during border crossings into the U.S. Separately, Bushley calls on Australia to implement more humane policies toward hundreds of migrants detained on Manus Island and Nauru. She says inequalities undermine social progress and economic and political stability, whereas human rights build hope. The High Commissioner urges nations to do away with the divisive, destructive forces of repression in favor of principled and more effective policies grounded in human rights. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
An American nonprofit called Water is Basic says more families are returning to Yeetown from IDP and refugee camps. Steve Rousey, president of the American nonprofit Water is Basic, says he has seen changes in the lives of people around Yeetown.
And so I've seen Ye go from a bustling, very busy city to virtually a ghost town in late 2016. And then every 2 months since peace has come, it's been remarkable for me to see the changes. They're small, but they're significant. More people on the road, bodabodas for hire, people returning to their homes and cleaning them out. What was most remarkable about my last visit, which was just literally 3 weeks ago, is how many people were repairing their thatched roofs. It's an expensive thing to do. You don't do that if you're not expecting to be around for a while, and it seemed like every roof in every house was being repaired. People were burning the grasses off and beginning to plant. There were lots more shops open in the village, etc. There was a genuine sense of hope, and I think perhaps the most important thing for me is there was light and sound and dancing and music at night, which I hadn't heard in over a year.
The people that are coming back, what are they telling you if you have spoken to them? What are they telling you?
I mean, there are more internally displaced people in South Sudan than there actually are refugees in Uganda, Congo, etc. But all of those folks are returning, and I've spoken to people who have come back from Uganda. I've spoken to people who've come back from Congo. Because we do water well repair, we often see people returning to their villages as soon as they hear that there's going to be clean water available. So I've talked to people who've returned as refugees, and I've also talked to people who are returning from just the bush, who have been displaced from Ye. And what I hear from all of them in genuine is that they've heard that there's peace, they've heard that there's stability, they've heard that there's security, and they want to get home and plant in their own fields. They want to be able to be responsible for their own food rather than having a handout. And as soon as they see an opportunity to get home, there's clean water, there's safety, they're coming home.
Humanitarian wing of the government, that's the South Sudan Relief and Rehabilitation Commission was raising alarm about the plight of around 6,000 people who have been displaced by fighting between South Sudan People's Defense Forces and the rebels of National Salvation Front. Did you get to see those people?
The day I landed in Yei, it had been reported that there was a mass grouping of government soldiers and NAS soldiers as well, and that there was a lot of conflict and a lot of people moving about. To be honest with you, I landed, didn't find any of that to be true. What I did find is that there were a few small bands of NAS, what I would call hooligans, who are just bothering people on the roadway. And when I say bothering, I mean killing and cutting and stealing, kidnapping. But I did not see it in mass. I did hear that there was an area near Lujulu where it was suggested that folks would move out of that area until the government could be sure that it was secure. I think the government's in a difficult place. They are being asked by the people, if you're our government, will you protect us from these hooligans? If they react to the hooligans, the international community says they're not abiding by the peace treaty, and I think it's a delicate place to be. What I am encouraged about is that those same hooligans did sign a peace agreement a week ago, Monday, in Yei River State. And in fact, tomorrow some will even be flying to Kampala to meet with their other folks in their work and tell them what's going on. And I think peace is now going to be seen right on the ground. See, there can't be national peace if there's not peace in the village. And this area of Yei River State has been in the news a lot lately, and very encouraged by the agreements we're seeing signed now.
That's Steph Rousey, president of the American nonprofit Water is Basic. He was speaking to me from the city of Dallas, Texas, last week. In our final part of this interview tomorrow, Rousey talks about peace-building efforts in Yei River State. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at an accomplishment of one South Sudanese woman during this International Women's Week.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how do you handle a friend who dismisses your opinions?
Most of the time, I just leave them because I would rather not argue with a person. I would rather just leave them and stick to their ideas, and I'll stick to mine.
If I know the opinions I'm giving out to my friend, they are productive and they are of help, I persist till when I see that they pick out value out of the opinions I'm giving them.
Definitely, if I'm giving you my opinion, I care. So if you dismiss my opinion, I just notice I just don't need to care for you like I am trying to.
I just obey his opinion. I believe that when he has a right to dismiss my opinion, and I do respect whatever he comes up with.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. A young South Sudanese woman is encouraging South Sudanese women to join male-dominated professions. As part of the International Women's Week, Amel Ajongo, my wood, spoke to our reporter Winnie Chirino about how she managed to achieve her childhood dream of becoming a pilot.
21-year-old Amel Ajongo Mawut is the daughter of Achok Madiu Madut and James Ajongo Mawut, the late former chief of general staff of the then SPLA. She is the third child in a family of three girls and one boy. Mawut says ever since she was a little girl, she dreamed about becoming a pilot.
When I was very small, that was in class, when I was in class four, that was in 2007. So you just get so excited when you just see aircrafts. And then people look at you wondering, what's wrong with this girl? So when I got in a high school, the interest became more and more. So when I finished my high school, immediately, you know, people would think of, I'll do driving school, I'll do computer, and then maybe I join university. For me, it was like, I'm done, I want to start flying.
Mawood says she went to St. Elizabeth Primary School in Nairobi and later attended Loreto Convent, Musongari for secondary education. After high school, she joined the Kenya School of Flying in Nairobi in 2016 and graduated in July last year. She says when she first told her parents she planned to become a pilot, they were happy and eager to support her decision. But she says her mother worried about her daughter flying planes, especially after she heard about a plane crash or a plane gone missing. Mawood says in training, students undergo an assessment in which an instructor flies with them for 3 hours, which is intended to acquaint students with the aviation industry and familiarize them with the aircraft. After the assessment, she says students sit for exams and must pass with at least a 70% score in theory courses such as navigation, map reading, principles of flights, operations, and metrology. Finally, Mawood says there comes the day when students are told to fly solo.
You look at the seat days and no, it's just you and you alone. So you have to be careful. You do about 6 hours solo, like just getting the confidence of flying alone. And then after that, you get to the local area where you're taught engine failures, such things. So in case maybe you get an engine failure, you know how to react to it.
Mawood finished flying school and came to Nairobi Wilson Airport, where she performed her general flight test, then received her private pilot license from Kenya Civil Aviation Authority. 8 months later, she obtained a commercial license. Mawood says there were 5 other girls training with her to get a private pilot's license, but she was the only girl out of 14 students who trained to get a commercial license. Because of her age, Mawood is not yet allowed to fly commercial airplanes. Once she turns 23, she can fly for a big airline like Kenya Airways or Ethiopian Airlines. Last November, she flew a caravan chartered flight from Juba to Awil, and she says she looks forward to one day flying huge airplanes like the Boeing 777.
Depending on what you'd want to do, because for me, I want to be an airline pilot, not a bush pilot, because general aviation is a bit hard for women. Just that, you know, they can call you anytime. You're just sleeping, and then they tell you, you know what, there's a flight tomorrow. And they know if it's airline, you know, I'm supposed to fly on this day I'm free. Okay, may I want that. I want something planned.
Mawood urges parents to support their daughters to achieve their dreams, and she encourages young girls not to be afraid to join male-dominated careers.
It's not a smooth journey, per se, because there are so many things you'll encounter. Most of us, female are very few in this industry. It's a male-dominated industry. So people always talk, you know, but then don't listen to them, just do your thing.
Mawood says she is making arrangements with an aviation company in South Sudan so she can train with them for some time to get familiar with the country's geography before she starts flying for a commercial airline. At the moment, Mawood is co-founder and vice president of South Sudan Sisterhood, a national organization supporting young girls with sanitary towels to help them stay in school. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
Ending human trafficking is difficult. That is according to Bandak Lul, a research project director at Arizona State University's Office of Sex Trafficking Intervention Research. Lul says there are better steps for diaspora and South Sudanese communities who would like to fight trafficking. Ayen Bior spoke to him.
I do believe that back home in South Sudan, we need to help vulnerable communities and people acquire the assets. Also, the tools that will overcome their vulnerabilities, like provide basic education. And this way, tomorrow there are availability in jobs where they're able to work and not be more likely to be exploited through labor. Also, we need to educate and organize vulnerable community. Individuals need to be made aware of the menaces and also the risks involved. Communities need to understand their rights and their risks of trafficking. And also by making the communities and the individual understand their role in the fight against trafficking, they will be able to organize anti-human trafficking committees and to act in their own neighborhoods. So they will access Neighborhood Watch. Furthermore, we need access to basic services and capacity building, and this involves affordable schooling, medical care, social safety nets, and as well as other forms of survivals.
And what's happened on this front in the last couple of years? Has there been a decrease or an increase in human trafficking?
So the tricky thing about data is that you're not always sure in this kind of situation of human trafficking that if the situation was never uncovered before and it always exists, and that now that the awareness is in existence, that numbers are showing, or if it's just increasing from 0 to like 100.
Well, this is a challenging and difficult fight, so I'm not surprised that the data reflects that as well. You know, without exposing any names of victims or any identifiable information, I'm just wondering, what are some of the stories that you hear from victims?
Some of the stories are very saddened, first of all, and with here in our data, we do discover a lot. But however, I personally have heard from survivors. One of the survivors came out and spoke about her experience when she met a trafficker. And the trafficker was a young man who came up to her and told her that, "I'm going to shower you with love. I'm going to give you a brand new cell phone. You're going to be living in our place, in our brand new place, and I'll make sure that you're good. You're taken care of." And this is what we call a Romeo trafficker, a trafficker who acts as a boyfriend, however, later on forces you to go in the streets to prostitute yourself. And when he forces you to go to the street and prostitute yourself, you don't get to keep the money that you go and make. And this is the situation that the young lady was put in by a trafficker.
That was Bandak Lul, a research project director at Arizona State University's Office of Sex Trafficking Intervention Research, speaking to Ayendeng Bior from Phoenix, Arizona. More than 5,000 members of the Kenya Aviation Workers Union went on strike today at Nairobi's Jomo Kenyatta International Airport. Hundreds of passengers cancelled or rescheduled their flights as security personnel broke up demonstrations within the airport facility. Rahel Ombo reports from Nairobi.
Police used tear gas and batons on Wednesday to disperse the demonstration by striking workers at Kenya's main international airport. The workers' union, which includes employees from the Kenya Airports Authority and Kenya Airways, went on strike earlier in the day. The union said it is striking because of corruption involving top managers, discrepancies in salaries, and objections to a proposed merger between Kenya Airways, the national carrier, and the Kenya Airports Authority, the body responsible for providing and managing all airports in the country. The merger would allow Kenya Airways to run Jomo Kenyatta International Airport. The Kenya Aviation Workers Union fear the agreement will lead to massive layoffs. Union Secretary General Moses Ndiema addressed the striking workers before being detained briefly by security personnel.
"Today we have commenced a strike action to protest against mismanagement within aviation industry, to protest against open and blatant corruption within aviation industry. We stand here today to demand that those who are looting KQ Airline, those who want to muzzle KAA, we are sending a message that the workers of aviation are fed up with you."
James Masharia, Kenya's Transport Cabinet Secretary, maintained the strike is illegal and called the striking workers criminals, maintaining that the strike was illegal.
"When you have a job, nobody has failed to pay your salary. Nobody has given you a threat that your job will be at risk. And yet you go on a strike. You have given assurances that the numbers are going up in terms of employment, and you still go on strike. That is called malice. It is called economic sabotage. It is something which cannot be tolerated. It is criminal activity."
He said any deal between Kenya Airways and the Kenya Airports Authority will result in more jobs.
"Our aviation sector will be much stronger. It will need more people. Jomo Kenyatta will become a true hub That's when they should be discussing what was the impact. If it was negative, then yes, they can say, oh, we are giving notice to go on strike.
For several years, Kenya Airways has dominated various routes in the African market. However, since 2013, the company has lost money, recording billions in shillings of after-tax losses. The Ministry of Labour on Wednesday set up a team to resolve the strike. Meanwhile, the Employment and Labour Relations Court is set to hear the dispute case starting Thursday. Rael Ombor for VOA News, Nairobi.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. The National Salvation Front says it will wait to hear IGAD's response to its letter before deciding whether to attend a meeting in Addis Ababa to talk about the holdout group joining the revitalized peace deal. IGAD invited NAS leader General Thomas Cirillo to talks on Friday. He also said there will be no renegotiation of the peace deal. NAS spokesman Samuel Suba says IGAD should clearly state its objectives before the meeting if it expects NAS leaders to take part in that meeting. Ismail Weiss, the IGAD special envoy to South Sudan, was saying that he invited Cirillo to talk in the Ethiopian capital and hopes to convince NAS to lay down its arms. Weiss warns, however, in the letter that any group unwilling to join the peace process and whose activities impede its full implementation shall be considered a spoiler and will be held accountable. UN Human Rights Chief Michelle Bachelet is warning that growing social, economic, and political inequalities are increasing alienation and instability in countries throughout the world. The High Commissioner presented a view of major human rights situations around the world in a speech to the UN Human Rights Council in Geneva. Bachelet says inequalities in income, opportunity, justice, and the enjoyment of human rights exist everywhere, rich and poor alike. Tackling these inequalities, she says, is critical in overcoming the grievances and unrest that fuel hatred, violence, and threats to peace. And finally, more than 5,000 members of the Kenya Aviation Workers Union walked off the job today, stalling operations at Nairobi's Jomo Kenyatta International Airport. And that's a look at some of today's top stories.
That's our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with the song Wanaide by Kwato Traditional Group. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Make better, don't you, my Jana? Make better, don't you, my Jana?